The following podcast may contain spoilers. Hello, and welcome to Binge Movies, episode 71. I'm Jason. In this episode, our feature presentation review of the Canon Films classic, 1987, Going Bananas, which currently has no available score on Rotten Tomatoes. Once in a generation, we reach out to the stars of film Twitter, the Pod Nations and Podern families, and all the other movie-related hashtags. And we call upon a hero, a champion. We ask him to come. He always answers our call. Of course, I'm talking about the man of the hour, Australia's favorite son, the god among the South Pacific. We're talking about Paul from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. We have not had you on in many an age. We cried out once again, and you heard our cries, and you've answered our prayers. Paul, our demigod, how are you, sir?
I am particularly well after that introduction. Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be on Binge Movies, though this time around, if I'm brutally honest, the pleasure has been a little more mitigated by the choice of films. But...
yes, you're going to be joining us in our very next episode where we're going to be doing a ranking episode of WTF, a.k.a. What the Fuck Movies. And for now, we're going to do a feature presentation review in the not-too-distant future, in a few short moments, of a What the Fuck movie called Going Bananas. Paul, what is your experience with Canon Films, and why the hell did you agree to appear in this episode?
Well, to answer the second question first, because you asked, and I think you do a great show, Jason. You pick apart films in a more constructive way than I could ever hope to, and I'm always thrilled to sit and listen to the way that you can do so and then be able to contribute my 2 or 3 cents is, yeah, it's a real pleasure for me. So thank you. You do a great show, and it's an honor to be back. The other question, I should say, Canon Films. Look, I watched a lot of Canon Films when I was 10 or 12 or 13 years old, sort of through to the late 80s, and I didn't know they were Canon Films at the time. To me, they were just films, and they were usually stupid films. I probably could even recognize that in my sort of older primary school, younger high school days, but they were entertaining films because I was watching the films like American Ninja and Ninja 3, The Domination. All those kinds of...
which is about... Which is if you took Flashdance, The Exorcist, and a ninja movie, and you made a movie out of it. No joke, that was the pitch. For Ninja 3, The Domination.
And they were, like, hilariously fun when I was that age. Then I saw the, I can't remember what it's called, Electric Boogaloo, the greatest untold story about Canon Films or whatever, documentary a few years back, which is very, very good and sort of goes into how this all worked and kind of came to understand that these were the cowboys in the Hollywood system who were just, you know, making promises and selling films after the fact, and often they were just terrible. And they're the ones I missed. I didn't see a lot of those ones. Or if I did and went back and rewatched them, I realized they were terrible retrospectively. The films that we cover next episode, including Going Bananas, that I'd never seen before. And with obviously good reason. Somehow I had steered around them, or my parents had refused to let me get them out, or they just never made it to the video shelves where I hired films from because they were that terrible. So this is a whole new level to Canon that I didn't really know existed.
Well, yes, I would say I've always compared Canon Films to Blumhouse before Blumhouse was Blumhouse, right? They that was their model, right? Is let's pitch shit, make it very cheap, and honestly, what it was let's take the money from this movie we're gonna make and use it for the next movie, right? We're gonna pre-sell a movie based on its idea. Take that money, make other movies, and then take the money from those movies and make other movies. And so it was almost like a confidence scheme. It was almost like a shell game of like robbing Peter to pay Paul, where they made their money, no pun intended, Paul, where they made their money was international rights. because a lot of their movies didn't get a lot of theatrical exposure in the United States. Right. At the time, there was a lot of places like Israel and other places in the Middle East, parts of Europe, that were not getting big budget American films. Or parts of Asia, they were not getting big budget American films from the Hollywood system. So what Canon would do is they would sell money and use foreign distribution rights and basically be like, put one recognizable name in it, like Chuck Norris or Death Wish.
Charles Bronson.
Yeah. And put their name on the poster and then like sell it to Malaysia. Be like, this is an American movie. And it would make a bunch of money overseas because those were the only American movies that they were getting for the most part. Sure. And then they would take that money and, you know, so it was, they were kind of cowboys and they were profitable enough to, in that scheme, for lack of a better term, to end up sort of building an actual studio system or of their own or actual studio in Hollywood. And at one point they bought a film, like a theater franchise, a chain of movie theaters in Europe, like the second largest theater chain in Europe. Yeah, they owned it. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, they made shit movies for the most part, but they were successful at it. They made a lot of money. It's just they spent more than they made. And yeah, let's make cheap movies. Let's sell it to underserved markets. Let's see what we can do. And today's film, they were attempting to adapt some literary works for children. And this was, I think, Canon's first attempt at making a quote-unquote kids movie. And we're going to see how they did, because we're going to get into our feature presentation review of 1987's Going Bananas.
Africa, land of mystery, beauty, and tourism. It's Dom DeLuise and Jimmy Walker.
Exactly how dangerous is this place?
On the wildest safari ever to hit the jungle.
This is not Disneyland we go to. Oh.
Going Bananas. Two Americans and their guide go deep into the bushland. On a cultural extravaganza.
Are you sure this man is a dentist?
No, no, no.
He's a qualified doctor.
I demand Novocaine!
And make a startling discovery.
I think he understands everything we say.
Banana.
It is a clever little monkey. What?
Which turns their holiday pleasure...
Anything from the bar.
Mm-hmm. Fully foussé. Well chilled.
Into monkey business.
This talking monkey is the eighth wonder of the world.
All right.
Let's get that monkey!
Dom DeLuise, Jimmy Walker, David Mendenhall, Herbert Lom, and Bonzo.
Bonzo?
Yeah, I named him Bonzo.
Give me a break.
In Going Bananas, everything a vacation...
I'm gonna miss you.
...was never meant to be.
You've got to cut down on the bananas.
Going Bananas has a not available on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Boaz Davidson, produced by Yoram Globus and Menachem Golan. It was written by Menachem Golan. It was released October 5th, 1987 in France, February 12th, 1988 in the United States, on a budget of, I don't know what, it made, I don't know what, at the worldwide box office. Now, Paul, it's time to play a little game we like to call Pass or Recast. Let's start with Dom DeLuise's Big Bad Joe. Paul, would you pass or recast Dom DeLuise?
Get used to a very consistent answer here. Recast.
Who in 1987 do you recast for a Canon Kids film about a little person in a monkey suit pretending to be a monkey?
Who gave a shit. You can't go any further worse backwards than Dom DeLuise.
Would unfortunately agree. What would you say about Dynamite Jimmy Walker as Mazombo? Pass or recast?
This one's tougher, if I'm really honest. I don't think he does a bad job with nothing that he's got. He's got nothing to work with, and he's saddled with this.
That's not true, Paul. He has horribly ethnocentric and racist stereotypes to work with.
Yeah, I was about to say, he's being told to act completely and utterly in a racist way. But at least he's black, so that's the only way this film could be worse, is if they had
a white guy in blackface. Honestly, and we'll get into it, it wouldn't put it past me if there was somebody in blackface in this film. And that's, I don't say it as a joke. I mean, this is some sketchy shit, even by 1980 standards.
Bad.
Yeah. What about David Mendenhall as Ben, the kid actor, passed or recast?
Recast.
Yeah.
Recast, he's terrible. He's utterly terrible. There's not a redeeming moment of this film. He has one face, which is just, vague surprise or pleasant surprise, and then smiling. That's all he does.
And he does a lot of chittering and chattering. Oh, wow! Wow!
Yep.
Wow! That is literally, his dialogue was mostly consist of exclamations of excitement and just, yeah! Wow! And that's it. That's all this kid...
Oh, Bonzo!
Bonzo, wow! That's it. That's all this fucking kid does. Yeah, recast. Let's see. Deep Roy as Bonzo, which is a triumphant return. We last saw Deep Roy in Revenge of the Fallen. You might know him as the Oompa Loompas in that horrible Tim Burton Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie. Would you pass or recast? Do you think Deep Roy does a good job as a chimpanzee? Or do you think they should have recast it? I don't know, with maybe a real fucking chimpanzee.
Well, clearly we're going to recast with a real monkey.
Yes.
Of some description. But I will say this. The redeeming feature of this film is the fact that at least he throws himself into the physicality of the role. He really does seem to be trying to move like an ape, or a chimpanzee in some scenes. Like, I respected the effort that must have gone into being sweating his balls off in that suit. So,
who did a better job? Who did a better job? Deep Roy as Bonzo or whoever played Amy in Congo? Who did a better job?
I'm going with Deep Roy. Deep Roy, because I remember hating Congo a lot, but I can't remember the specific performance.
Amy won Raindrop Drink. Amy won Raindrop Drink. Of all the human being performances of obnoxious primates, Deep Roy may be the least obnoxious, other than Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, of course.
What about Warren Burlinger as Palermo? Pass or recast?
Recast.
Yeah,
recast.
Didn't even miss a beat. How many circuses do they have in Africa, I wonder?
Apparently one.
And
too many.
What about Herbert Lom as Captain McIntosh? Pass or recast?
Recast as someone who's got a mustache to twirl, please.
All right, Paul, let's begin with the plot here. I got a question for you straight off the bat. What do you make and what do you know of the great nation state that is Tangola?
I know nothing. I assume it is either a tiny African nation, or I didn't even look this up. I assume it's a made-up nation because they were trying to not be offensive, at least at that level.
Oh, yeah. It's a completely fabricated nation.
Good, thank God.
They arrive on this a steamer in 1980-something. Who the fuck was going to Africa in a steamer in 1980-something? See, I think the issue is 85-year-old Menachem Golem read these books about a talking monkey in the 1930s. He decided to adapt them in the 1980s, but he kept all of the trappings of the 1930s. This is a movie. This is a This is a black and white, pre-talkie sort of plot of going, white people going to, they literally say, the dark heart of Africa. She's as beautiful as she is vicious, and the people will eat you. That's what they say. That is how they introduce the African culture of Tangola. That these are this is a beautiful country, but the people here are dark and horrible and are cannibals. And this is a children's movie. And it's all of these old Hollywood racist tropes I just 100%. Imagine Menachem Golem sitting in Israel as a child, watching American-made films, black and white films, of King Kong, the African Queen, even older ones, more obscure ones than that, and sitting there and being entranced by it. And this is his chance to produce and write that movie for kids. and no kid in 1980 something would want to watch this movie. It's about circuses and I think Nazis at some point. The captain, is he a Nazi? Like, what is his accent? Is it colonial Africa, but it's the 1980s? So why is the white military there? Like, this isn't South Africa. It's
very strange.
It's witch doctor jokes. It's all of the racist Bugs Bunny goes to Africa tropes, but with live action people and Dom DeLuise, which is not really live action. He's neither live nor acting.
Nor acting.
So he's just sort of there. He's just Dom DeLuise in his way through the movie. And I just, who the fuck was the audience for this?
I don't know. It's a very good question because it's painfully unfunny. I guess we're going to emphasize this time and again. Obviously, Dom DeLuise is meant to be funny. He's meant to be the guy out of his depth, not doing something he doesn't want to do and having to look after this kid who's all full of exuberance and life, and he's got to rein him in to keep him safe from himself. But, oh, well, damn it, this monkey joins their crew and then they form an attachment to the monkey and they've got to keep it alive. And I guess you're meant to think that everyone here is oh, they're charming and they're lovely and oh, Dom DeLuise has got a heart full of gold and oh, he's reacting badly to the animals and and he's worried about everyone attacking him or killing the kid or it's awful. There's not a single laugh in this entire film except incredulously. Except when things happen like the monkey starts talking or later, I'll save the big reveal.
Yeah, save the big reveal. So the joke is supposed to be, here's foppish, persnickety, those are neither terms I would use to describe Dom DeLuise. Here's persnickety Dom DeLuise perseverating his way through the African savannah, you know, and he's just, he's worried about this, and he's worried about this, and Master So-and-so, don't do this, and Master So-and-so. And this kid is just this wide-eyed, lovely child of gullibility and naivete who's just excited, doesn't understand how dangerous these animals are in Tongola. And you have Mazumbo, who's this charming tour guide, and they go on these wacky adventures and these mishaps happening with these animals. And then it's cutting from them just sitting around talking. And a hallmark of bad movies and bad comedies is it thinks, and this is as true today as it was in the days of Menachem Golem. If you don't believe me, just go watch that Ghostbusters movie from 2016. If a movie is unfucking funny, they seem to think that they can derive humor by just having the characters perpetually talking, just constantly, incessantly mumbling to themselves and talking to each other and talking to no one in particular and worrying and blah, 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 blah. And Melissa McCarthy talking about wontons and her chicken soup and Dom DeLuise talking about the cheese from his hoagie is missing and banana pills and whatever the fuck. And that's supposed to be the humor of the movie. It's not funny. Whenever you're around somebody who just is that incessant, you don't want to be around them. So why would I want to watch 90 minutes of five different people talking over each other with no punchlines, no gags, no setups, no jokes? There are no jokes. There are just endless diarrhea, spewing dialogue, and then bad comedy gags that are poorly executed, mixed with some really shitty editing, and then cut to B-roll footage of Wild Safari. I mean, that's all it is. That's all this movie is.
Yep, you're right. And baffling, if I can now wade in with the plot side of things, and baffling decisions by the characters. Nothing in this movie makes any sense. Okay, sure, it's about a monkey that is so intelligent that it puts everybody else in this film to shame, but why, if Dom DeLuise's character, what's his name? Joe.
Big Bad Joe.
Yeah, Big Bad. Where's the Big Bad come from?
I don't know.
Big I get.
Big Joe, got it. Big Joe. Hopkins. Bad Joe? Big Bad Acting Joe. Big Bad Actor Joe. Sure. They might as well just call him Dom DeLuise at that point.
Yeah, because Dom DeLuise is playing Dom DeLuise.
Correct.
Joe is completely concerned about being in this safari park. As he should be, because I've got one guide who doesn't seem to give a shit about anything approaching safety. They haven't got any sides on the Jeep that they're in. And yet, Ben runs off into the bushes and into the bush, the savannah.
Yeah, yeah.
And with Mazombo in tow, and Joe stays around, and he falls asleep because he's that worried, and he lets Ben run off because he's that worried.
Yep.
And like every one of these decisions is just bizarre, and it's just to service three scenes of him interacting in a weird way with a local animal, including the lion that sits on the roof of the Jeep and then waves its tail in his mouth.
Yeah,
like awful, just truly, truly awful.
It's truly awful, and another sign of, just to give you a insight into one of these wonderful gags, is Mazombo, played by Jimmy Walker, whose very strange Tagalog accent comes and goes at will. Like, I'm pretty sure wherever he's from, it is in Africa. Like, this guy cannot maintain his accent at all at any point in this movie. Dom DeLuise chips a tooth at, so it's literally a black tooth gag, like you're watching something from Abbott and Costello, and I need to go to a dentist, I gotta go to a dentist, my god, my tooth, I have to go to a dentist. And it's like, that's the joke, is Dom DeLuise is like, I can't believe it, my tooth, I busted my tooth out, and then it goes on and on. I was like, you have to take me to a dentist, do you know a dentist? And he's like, my uncle is a dentist. And then they go, and instead of being a witch doctor, he's a witch dentist. And then they proceed to tell him that he's done the dentistry for everybody in this primitive tribe of, and I mean, they're really presented truly as savages, right? Mm-hmm. And this group of, aboriginal people, this far-flung tribe, who somehow is Mazombo, who perfectly speaks English. That's his uncle somehow, right? And nowhere else in this country are the people really this primitive. So why are these people that primitive? It makes no sense. This is a semi-developed country. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. They don't speak English. They speak whatever.
100% agree.
And cut to the crowd, and their teeth are missing. And I'm everybody's dentist. And none of them have teeth. Then they have this wacky comedy chair where Dom DeLuise is sitting in this chair that's like powered by coconuts, or it's Gilligan's Island bullshit. And then like they're gonna like drill, and so then the worst gag is like, Novocaine, I need Novocaine. Oh, somebody give me Novocaine. And then his aunt has a blow dart gun and blows a poisonous dart into his neck and knocks him out. And that's end scene. And it's supposed to be hilarious. What part of that is funny? The fact that people of color are presented as primitive savages.
Savages.
Or the fact that Dom DeLuise is just bitching for 20 minutes. Like, there's no joke.
No, it's meant to be funny, though. It absolutely is presented as, hey, that's hilarious.
It's the wacky.
Heart of sophisticated comedy in a Dom DeLuise film from 1986.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It is warmed over wacky comedy of what happens if we take, a prim and proper. Once again, I wouldn't describe Dom DeLuise as prim or proper. Let's throw this guy in with the savages and laugh. And here's the thing. The movie's supposed to be about a kid and is becoming friends with a monkey. When does that happen? It happens like, feels like 40 minutes into this movie before the monkey even shows up. It's an hour before the fucker even talks. It's a movie about a talking monkey, and the monkey doesn't talk until an hour, and the movie's only 90 minutes. What are we doing?
It seems to be implied that the monkey talks because of his association with Ben, that Ben teaches him to talk.
Yes.
And then by the end of this 85-minute film or whatever it is, the monkey's basically speaking in full sentences. What?
So for some reason, the local Nazi, or whatever he is, Captain McIntosh, is in league with Palermo, who is a white circus owner. The circus only exists to seem to serve the people of Tongola, but the people of Tongola mostly live in a safari park, from what we can see. The reason why zoos and circuses and whatnot are attractive is because they're exotic.
Yes.
If somebody had a squirrel park for me to go to, I wouldn't give a fuck. If somebody was like, we have a woodchuck and groundhog museum over here. Well, I mean, other than in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, you know, is that you can come to. I'm not going to go see that. If we're going to train fucking chipmunks how to ride unicycles, I can skip that, right? I'll watch the squirrel riding the watered skis on YouTube. I've seen the video. I don't need to go and see it. I don't really need to go see a domesticated cat circus. So somebody who lives in a fucking safari park isn't going to give two shits. There are elephants walking down the street of this town, and yet the people are going to pay money to see elephants walking around? What sense does this make?
Little to none. And yet, again, the film doesn't care about that kind of thing. It's just a set piece to get some kind of villains in play, some rationale or motivation for them, because for some reason they set their sights on this particular monkey. At that stage, it's not particularly intelligent or whatever. It just creates a scene. And then the circus owner says, I want that.
Okay.
And then you can be in business with me.
Yeah, so we're getting there, right? So what would make more sense to me, right, is this guy is going and poaching, essentially, animals from Africa to take them back to Europe or wherever the fuck Palermo's from for his circus. That would make sense, right? We're stealing animals from the safari park with the help of the local... not even really the local government, the occupying government, and the people of Tongola and nature itself is being raped by the bad Europeans, right? That would be historically accurate and would make sense. They're doing that, but they're doing that to then have a circus in the same place they stole the animals from. Is it just because they couldn't afford to shoot in Europe?
Yes. I was about to say exactly the same thing, because I can't afford to take it anywhere else. That's the restriction here for sure.
So the monkey gets in with the kid and there's shenanigans and going bananas. And Dom DeLuise.
If I could jump in there, there's a moment where they decide they're going to their five-star restaurant because Joe has to go to his five-star restaurant. And how are they going to get a monkey in?
Oh, that's what I was talking about. That's where I was going with this, Paul. Yes. Okay. Explain what happens to the binge lords at home.
Well, they decide to dress the monkey up in a... I guess some kind of costume of a young lady, a very small lady or little girl.
Drag.
Complete with a veil.
Drag.
And a hat. Drag, yes.
Yes.
And walk into the restaurant and everyone's treating this clearly, perfectly, this monkey. So a little person in a monkey suit who's now dressed in drag.
As a woman.
Everyone's treating her as if she's a real woman.
Not just a real woman, like, as if she's the fucking Queen of England. Oh, madame. Yeah. And for some reason, it's a five-star French restaurant in Tangola with a German Nazi commandant and an Italian, presumably Palermo circus owner. Where is Tangola? Where is this country? Is it at what continent are they on? What?
It's on the borderline of all countries, clearly.
Whatever continent they're on is the continent where apparently there's not much difference between little people dressed as apes, dressed as women, and ordinary women. I don't understand. Even if we're a kid's movie, this does not pass. This is ridiculous.
Especially the guy that starts dancing with him.
We have an extended scene where the snooty French maitre d' is trying to get a champagne order from a chimpanzee who's speaking gibberish. I'm pretty sure it's Frank Welker doing the voice, is speaking gibberish, and they're trying to decide what the chimp or the ape or whatever the monkey is saying. And they're gonna go bring him lobster or whatever, and at some point somebody grabs, I don't even remember, the monkey starts romantically dancing with another man up to the point the man goes for a kiss to sexually accost a little person in an ape suit dressed as a woman, and the ape, the monkey, hits him in the balls. And I will say this, I'm proud that the movie had enough restraint to keep the first crotch shot with cartoon sound effects of boing, 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 boing. Well, this late in the film, I was expecting more ball play earlier And so normally you lead with the ball play, but this movie decided to save it for a little bit later. And I was proud of the movie for that. Shows restraint, you know.
Yes. What a film. What
have you ever seen, Paul? A moment in on your podcast, do you ever watch movies where Frenchmen sexually assault monkeys?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head, but we're always open to, well, we're actually running out of ideas, so maybe that should be the next countdown. Top 10 scenes where Frenchmen assault monkeys.
Sexually assault monkeys. Have you ever seen a children's, well, now you can say you have. Before this, had you ever seen a children's film where a snooty Frenchman sexually assaulted a little person dressed as a monkey?
No. I have not.
It's the role of a lifetime, Paul. Sure.
Yeah, you know that's a different film on this list.
We'll get to that next episode. It seems like the gags were written with dialogue, but then they threw the dialogue out and were like, we can improvise our way through this and it'll be so much funnier. And it wasn't. The movie is convinced that if the characters on screen are laughing, we, the audience, will be laughing too. Because this monkey proceeds to start a food fight and throwing pies at people, and just generally wreaking havoc, as monkeys are prone to do, destroying this restaurant. And Palermo, the owner of the circus, is just laughing and laughing and laughing until he ends up getting a pie in the face, which felt like a Buster Keaton sketch, like old silent movie Buster Keaton, where there's the big fat aristocrat who's laughing at all the chaos until he gets the pie in the face. It felt like Marx Brothers sort of shit. And I like the Marx Brothers, but horse feathers, this is not. This is no good.
100%. Are you getting a sense here, binge lords and ladies, that what's going on? Because this is not a curiosity factor. This is just reprehensibly bad from the ground up.
Paul, just like Bonzo, binge lord is a gender-neutral term. So,
okay, sorry.
Yeah. We have an extended dungeon banana scene. Okay. Oh, all our... Oh, this is not as sexual as I made it sound. All of our protagonists, including the small child who is the son of a U.S. senator, is thrown into a medieval dungeon, which apparently is how Tongolan justice works. And they're in a
straw on the floor.
With straw on the floor, and there are legit African extras strung up, starving to death. And for some reason, the joke of this entire scene is about them, whether or not they're going to eat bananas. I don't even know how to explain this. If I'm in this prison, I'm dying, but I'm going to be happy and laughing as I watch this ape eat the food that was meant for me as I'm starving. And the prisoners start clapping because Bonzo's doing tricks with bananas and learns very slowly and crudely over what feels like 20 minutes to say,
banana, ba. Want a free nana? Banana.
This goes on and on and on.
I thought someone had turned the movie on in the background. That was so accurate.
That was pretty good. Apparently, I could do a good Bonzo impression. I'm A+ right there. And I'm just sitting there going, why not give these one of these 20 bananas to the poor people who are starving to death? One guy's being drawn and quartered in the corner of this kids' movie. Get a guy a banana. Instead, we just keep giving bananas to this monkey to have him keep saying banana. Ben and Bonzo eventually get out of prison. I don't even remember how the fuck out. And are playfully swinging around on vines.
They escape.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they escape prison.
They escape, and the other two are caught. Joe and Mazombu are caught, and the other two get back out into the safari, into the savannah, and then are, you know, doing things like swinging on trees. And Ben's like, I don't know if I should do that. And then, of course, he falls and hurts himself and is stuck with one of the most hilarious scorpion scenes you will ever see in any film ever, and in a unintentional way.
Well, Bonzo convinces him it's safe. Oh, no, it's perfectly fine here, Ben. Go ahead, swing around like Shia LaBeouf in an Indiana Jones movie. Just swinging around with monkeys and pompadours. Of course, Ben falls, and this movie would have been more interesting had there been a real wicked turn and they went full 128 hours, and Ben had to let Bonzo bite off his arm to escape the crevasse he fell into. Instead, Ben is surrounded and covered, I use the term covered very loosely, with scorpions, and has to be pulled out via vine by Bonzo. As Bonzo rescues Ben, only for the boy to gently pass away under a banyan tree. The end. That's the end of the movie.
If only.
Instead, almost all of that happens, except for, yeah, they're crudely shooting around. I'm guessing part of that was a stunt double, because at certain points it looked like a grown man in little boy's clothes.
Yeah,
covered with scorpions. They wouldn't show his face. The camera would just pan over his body, and it was clearly like a male gymnast dressed in little boy's clothes.
But fair enough. I wouldn't want to be that kid and have scorpions all over me either.
That was so ridiculous. And then when they actually show the kid, the scorpions are like 3 feet away from him. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's not crippled. He's not paralyzed. He's not stuck.
No.
Just get the fuck up.
He's walking normally. Stand up, you fool.
Stand up.
Exactly the note I made.
Walk away. Just get up and walk 2 feet to the left. What are you doing? Instead, we have to watch Deep Roy deadlift a little child out of a crevice via a vine where you can clearly see he's harnessed in. And at that point, I thought, if there was ever a film that would kill a kid other than Twilight Zone, the movie, courtesy of Landis and Steven Spielberg.
That's dark. No. Very dark there.
They killed two kids and Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad. If there was ever a movie to kill a kid, it would be a Menachem Golem movie. If there was ever a
Nick Morrow, Jennifer Jason Leigh's dad.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a more infinitely more interesting than Going Bananas. No, but listen, yeah. If any movie were to kill its kid star, it would be a canon kids film. It would be Menachem Golem, because how this kid is rigged up and being hoisted up by a little person. I assume other people were helping. But this actually did look unsafe. I was actually worried. I was like, this kid's going to die. They're going to recast him as like the guy who was in Gymkhana, suddenly going to be the kid. And they're going to have no explanation. Like, we're going to watch this boy die on screen. He doesn't, unfortunately. Or fortunately, if you're David Mendenhall. Whatever. And but he does get a diphtheria or red fever or cholera from some dirty monkey water that's fed to him out of. Did you notice how Bonzo magically finds a gourd with a handle in it to go draw water?
I did not notice that. What I did notice, though, is that thankfully for poor Ben, who's now so deathly ill, there's a hospital 2 kilometers away. Now, yep. For a backwards third world, not well-financed nation, what's it called?
Tongola.
Tongola seems to have a lot of very conveniently placed things that are just around the corner to help. So I would imagine there's a hospital every square 10 kilometers in Tongola.
When you are a kid, are you looking forward to your fun kid monkey adventure movie where the main kid actor nearly falls to his death, is briefly covered by scorpions, drinks dirty river water downstream from yaks, and then has been hugging and kissing all over this unvaccinated chimpanzee or ape creature all movie? I mean, the closeness, the sexual tension between this boy and that ape is off the charts. I don't know that they're buddies. They're almost lovers. I mean, it's sick. And when you look at it, you realize it's 45-year-old Deep Roy in that costume. And you're like, there's just something obscene about what I'm watching. But
I hadn't thought about that way.
If I'm supposed to. I did, Paul. I did think about it that way. So if you're watching this movie, even if I suspend my disbelief and believe that's a real monkey, the monkey is still making out with this kid. There's fleas, at least. There are ticks or something. This kid is getting many, many diseases from this trip. And he should be in the hospital, and he should die, and he almost does. Bonzo gets into the hospital, and Bonzo repeatedly says,
Bonzo love Ben, la la.
La la.
Bombs are love bombs. Bombs are love bombs.
It starts singing over the dead body of this child, and through the power of monkey love, resurrects this boy. The power of primate love brings the bond between a boy and his monkey, brings Ben back to life. Not medicine, folks. Power of monkey love.
Don't knock it till you've tried it, Jason. Maybe.
maybe
that's all it takes.
The corrupt police captain hears Bonzo talking and decides to snag him, but that was already his plan. This movie, he had already heard the monkey talk, was already going to snag him and already sell him to Palermo, but he responds to this monkey talking and singing as if he's never known it before. He's like, I have to get that monkey now. I have to sell that monkey to Palermo. Bonzo ends up getting taken over to the circus, which is in town.
2 kilometers away.
Yeah, Bonzo's local. He's local, you know? Like, you don't bring local talent in, you know? You outsource that sort of shit. Nobody wants... This is like, what is this, open mic night at the circus? Let the monkey come in, right? And his whole act is like, talk, monkey, talk for the people. And he says banana and some shit in front of these people. And then the plan, somehow... Mazambo and Big Bad Joe and Ben all get back together, and they decide they can't leave without helping Bonzo, because actually somehow. No.
Ben makes them.
No. Mazambo makes them go to the circus before they go to the...
Oh, they go to flight. The port.
That's right, before they go to port. So they go to the circus, and they're all having just a wonderful time seeing the same fucking animals they just lived with for a week on safari, just with like funny little hats on. Then they see Bonzo come out with a chain around his neck, and Ben demands a Big Bad Joe. It's not fair.
Yep.
Forget the rest of those animals who are suffering with the circus.
Yeah.
All I care about is that monkey I've been making out with for the last hour. So they have to break Bonzo free because he's a special little monkey. They dress up like clowns.
Oh, God.
A little
after knocking out and presumably assaulting the clowns who actually were going to be coming off.
Yeah, they physically assault children's clowns, stealing their clothes. So you have Mazumbo, played by Jimmy Walker. You have Little Ben. And you got Dom DeLuise dressed up as clowns with seltzer water, bottle sprayers, and banana cream pies, and whipped cream gags, and fucking flowers that squirt water, and, you know, whoopee cushions, and all the funniest jokes. And we have an extended scene of Dom DeLuise's stunt double.
Oh, he's extended. Holy crap.
Doing high fly circus maneuvers on the trapeze, the flying trapeze with the greatest of ease, is Dom DeLuise's stunt double flying through the air. And at this point, it's just basically this cut to B roll of a circus. And we just watch, I don't know, an hour, 5 hours, 2 days worth of circus B roll.
Oh.
Was this the worst part of the movie for you? This is where I started to tap. I was like, please.
I was out at the point of the scene in the restaurant. Actually, I think the moment the monkey started to talk, banana, and I was like, I'm done. I'm done with this movie.
Banana.
I didn't read the synopsis before I watched it, so I didn't know if he's destined to be a talking monkey. So for me, that came as an organic plot development.
It was very
organic. I was very like, what am I fucking watching? It's going to be Trump, though. And we're coming to the piece de resistance of the film where I was back on board very briefly as I watched with my mouth agape that this was actually being presented to me. So... all I wanted was this bit to end. I'm like, just get on with it. They're obviously going to get away. Can we please? It just went on, as you say, on and on. Was it 10 minutes of stunt doubles doing a circus act?
Yeah.
Basically, I'm like, well, clearly they paid for a circus to come on board and do this scene, and they were going to get their money's worth, damn it.
Paul, if you're a writer, you just got to go where the story takes you. As they sat down and the words began to flow. And Menachem Golem sat down on his typewriter, and the words of going bananas just started to flow through him, as if some primordial spirit was speaking through him to reach a new generation of children, to entrance them in the magic of cinema. The words, the story, it led to this organic place where Bonzo began to speak. You don't control the story. You got to let the dog drive, Paul, when you're writing. You just go where the story takes you. This is where the story took him. The story took him to the circus. And after the circus, where next did the story take Menachem Golem and Bonzo Ben, Big Bad Joe and Mazambo, Paul?
It took them to the skies.
That's where our dreams are, Paul. Our dreams are up in the sky. And where else do...
Unbelievable.
This is about the power of cinema and storytelling, Paul. And the power of a boy and his monkey, where it lifts you off the ground and takes you up to the heavens for your dreams to be fulfilled. And how do they get there in this movie, Paul?
Well, they stumble across a biplane, which happens to be conveniently located nearby, probably 2 kilometers away, after they escape from the circus. And they're being pursued by Palermo and the corrupt police chief and all the soldiers. And so they jump in because they're going to be late for their boat, and they can't be late for their boat. But thankfully... Who's going to fly this? Will it be Joe finally stepping up to the mat to fulfill his destiny as being an absolutely good chaperone for Ben? Will it be Ben himself who's just going to throw caution to the wind? Or will it be our guide who, because he has all these other talents, he may also be able to help fly a plane? Oh no, it won't be any of those three. It will be Bonzo himself.
That's right, folks. The monkey gets into the cockpit. Mazambo and Big Bad Joe, a.k.a. Dom DeLuise's stunt double, are hanging off the sides of a crop-dusting biplane as the boy and the monkey take off. And we just get done. The most annoying music on the face of God's green earth is circus music. We just heard 10 uninterrupted moments of circus music at Comedy Pratfalls, and the least absurd thing about that was watching Dom DeLuise on a trapeze. Now we're expected to believe that Dom DeLuise could support his weight, or better yet, the crop duster at the biplane could support the weight of Dom DeLuise on one wing and Jimmy fucking Walker on the other. And the monkey would somehow be able to keep the thing balanced. Now, I might be able to believe that a monkey can fly a crop duster. I've never seen a monkey fly a biplane. I don't know. Maybe that's part of their evolutionary development.
Chip DNA.
Yeah, they've got opposable thumbs. Who knows, right? Right? It's in there. You know, they can unlock it. They can open bananas, right? They fling their own poo. They can fly a fucking plane. It's all the same. But Randy Quaid himself, fueled by wild turkey, couldn't fly a crop duster with Dom DeLuise throwing off the weight ratio on one wing. I'm sorry. I don't believe it. You asked me to suspend my disbelief, Paul. Menachem Golem says, suspend your disbelief. Believe this little person is a monkey. Believe a monkey could fly. You'll believe that a monkey could fly. Yeah, and I believe it until you say, with Dom DeLuise holding on to the side of the plane. That plane ain't getting off the fucking ground. That plane is nosediving. Those fuckers are dead. The people of Tongola are responsible for the death of a child of a U.S. senator. We would bomb the fuck out of Tongola. We would bomb those people back to the goddamn Stone Age because we're Americans, goddammit. And who let that monkey fly that plane? With Dom DeLuise hanging on the side.
Astounding. It is truly, truly astounding. And I honestly thought this film couldn't get any worse, and I watched this part, and I almost... did the whole comical throw your hands in the air and storm out of the room type. Like I had to go to the kitchen and get myself a drink. And I can't. And then it does something which we kind of glossed over and I meant to bring up. Of course, he lands the plane successfully on the port, knocking over all manner of the locals, you know, stores and carts and whatever else. Yeah. And which is a callback to what Jimmy Walker did in the first scene. Like, that's a really respectful thing to do for a guide of your countrymen. Just drive straight into and knock over someone's business to pick up the rich white clients that you have. Like, what the fuck is that trying to say?
I'm pretty sure what it's trying to say is racism, Paul. Racism. Yeah,
fuck, man.
The word you're searching for is racist. So the villains are they're chasing him on the plane and the car. And then they go, give me back my monkey, which I've said quite a few times in my life. And then some local native some local native comes along and or a elephant or something crushes a melon on their head or some shit. I don't know. Or Bonzo crushes a melon on their head. I don't remember. But it's like, boom, boom. You know, that's the end of the villains, folks. Then we get a soft rock, tearful goodbye between one of the worst child actors and a little man in a monkey suit, loving all over each other, grooming one another, crying.
Oh, Bonzo love, man.
Over and over.
Bonzo said, no, don't go, man.
Of all of the voices they could have picked for this monkey, they picked the most excruciating voice. They casted it next to Dom DeLuise doing some of the worst comedy ever recorded in film, with Jimmy Walker doing a worse African accent than Ernie Hudson in fucking Congo.
I know this is hard to believe, but this is not hyperbole. This is all 100% accurate.
And it's all coming together at one time, and it's miserable. And this bad music is playing, and it's we're supposed to care. This movie is trying its damnedest to pull at our heartstrings. Did you shed a tear, Paul? Because I know I didn't.
Yeah, I did, at the waste of time that I spent watching this movie.
You shouldn't have shed a tear. It wasn't a waste of time, because Bonzo then illegally boards the steamer train.
Ocean liner.
Yeah, ocean liner. Back to America. And then, like a fucking Looney Tunes cartoon, Bonzo's sitting on the ship, or a rock or something, and he literally goes, bye-bye, kids, bye-bye. And then, doo-whoop. And then there's a Looney Tunes, like, hole that closes up, and it's, you know, and that's the end of the movie. And then I think they promise a sequel. Bonzo will be back, and Bonzo was never seen again.
Thank all that is holy.
Paul, you are a parent. Did you show your child Going Bananas?
No, I didn't. I thankfully I realized that even she would. I say even she. She's probably got better taste in films than I have. We. 6 months ago, give or take, watched Cats, and she walked out after 11 minutes. I can't do this. And off she went, my seven-year-old. I sat there and watched the whole damn thing.
Me too, buddy. I paid money to see that in theaters. Here's my question to you. Do you believe that this movie has any relevance to any child in 1935, 1985?
Nope.
2020, 2030? Who was this for? Why was this made?
Well, let's go back to what you said. Let's go back to what you said, in the sense of, so they sold films on the strength of an idea. They did a mock-up poster. They showed it to distributors and they went, yeah, we want that film. That'd be awesome. Okay. Who went, oh, a film about a talking monkey in a fictional African nation with a couple of white people running around and being culturally insensitive? That sounds great. Even in 1986.
And the marquee name is Dom DeLuise.
Yeah. Who bought that?
Apparently nobody, because there is no box office returns for this movie, and you can currently find the entire film uninterrupted, unedited, on YouTube. It's a VHS rip, but it's on there, and I don't see any copyright claims coming against that channel. So if you really want to see how miserable a kid's movie could be, you can find Going Bananas on YouTube for free. The only redeeming factor for this entire episode is I don't think either one of us paid any money for this.
Yeah, correct. Watch it on YouTube. I actually said to you, I'm not sure I'll be able to find this one. And you said, it's on free on YouTube. And I think my response was, damn it.
Yeah, you're not getting out of this one, Paul. Yeah, because literally if I made you pay for this, other than with your time and the precious seconds of life you'll never, ever get back that you spent watching this, I would feel like I personally would owe you a refund, and I'd have to send you the $3.99 Amazon fee for renting it. If you had to give this movie a score out of 10, what would you give it?
Well, I thought long and hard about this score, and at the time I watched this, I honestly wrote, this is the worst movie I've sat through since I began podcasting.
You're welcome.
However, has been usurped, and if you want to know which film usurps it, tune in to the next episode of Binge Movies.
Yeah, Paul, be joining us for the next episode, and let's just say it's all down here from here, folks.
Yeah, so I'm giving this a 0.5 out of 10 purely for the Deep Roy's performance as Bonzo sweating it out in that I feel so bad for him in this particular film that I feel like I have to acknowledge it must have been really hard. And I think he tried to give some kind of physicality to the role.
Would you want Deep Roy to reprise his role in Going Bananas 2 in a modern reboot of this franchise?
No. No, I wouldn't want a reboot. Hard as that is to believe that I don't want to watch a sequel or a reboot to a 0.5 out of 10 film. No,
what about if it was, leave it alone. What if it was a mocap movie? What if Andy Serkis was Bonzo?
Even Andy Serkis could only elevate this to a 1 out of 10.
What if it was a CGI Dom DeLuise, because he's dead, and a motion cap Bonzo, and then just get Dave Mendelsohn. I don't think he's doing anything. 40-year-old Dave Mendelsohn, but he's still portraying an 8-year-old boy.
No.
What if it was directed by Bong Joon-ho?
No. There's nothing. There is nothing that could bring me back to watch 1 second of this film ever again, or a reboot, or in my life. And I would be so angry at the studio that greenlit that they didn't spend the money somewhere else, that I'd probably boycott that studio for the rest of my life.
If Universal decided they're going to have Bong Joon-ho direct Vin Diesel as Big Bad Joe with a cameo with a CGI Dom DeLuise Paul Walker style with a score by Pitbull starring Andy Serkis mocapping his way through as Bonzo and 87-year-old Dave Mendelsohn re-portraying Ben as the same age as he was in 1986 through de-aging, you would not at least be interested. If it was announced on Twitter, you wouldn't be at least be like,
We could play this game as long as you want. The answer is still going to be no.
I call bullshit on that. I guess. Come on, man. You'd at least watch the trailer. You'd at least watch the trailer.
Nope. I would walk out of the cinema if that trailer came on before a film I was due to see. And I would remember this moment, and I would message you and say, I'd take a video as I walked out. See?
You do it just to spite me. After all these years, Paul, after all these years. I'm right there with you, though. I give it a 0 out of 10. This adds a short list of movies I've given a 0 to. This is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. This is one of the worst children's movies ever made. I don't know what audience this serves. This is really offensive. It plays in the pool of racist stereotypes. It's poorly edited. It's poorly shot. It's poorly filmed. It isn't funny. It's annoying. It's grating. Yep. It is taxing. There's not a redeemable thing about it other than the time and effort of poor little Deep Roy in that hot suit in the African heat. They nearly killed poor Deep Roy. And that's about all I can say about this man suffered for his art. And this is what is his career going to be, really? Like, is when it's all said and done, is he going to be remembered for playing an Oompa Loompa and going bananas? I mean, the guy's been in Hollywood for 70 years, and his biggest claim to fame is being a god awful Tim Burton movie. And I guess the second one was what? Being Bonzo?
Poor choice of words saying biggest claim to fame, by the way.
Yeah, and on that note, that's our review of 1986's Going Bananas.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began. Oh, I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. When I see you again.
Once again, we want to thank Paul for joining us on this episode, but we're not done with him yet. He's going to be coming back to join us to give our definitive rankings on some of the most what the fuck movies ever made, which includes 1980s Xanadu, 1980s The Apple, 1987's Going Bananas, which we just did our feature presentation review on, and 1988's Mac and Me, but we're not stopping there. We're going into the new millennium with one of potentially the most what-the-fuck movies ever made. Yes, of course, I'm talking about 2003's Tiptoes. Where will these rank and which will be added to the short list to be determined which film should be preserved for all time? Will it be Mac and Me? Or is it going to be preserved for all time? Will it be Tiptoes? It's the role of a lifetime. How do we not add something like that to the vault? We'll find out on our very next episode, episode 72.
I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
I'll tell you.
When I see you again.
All right, Paul, you will be joining us in our very next episode as we talk about 1980s Xanadu, 1980s The Apple, 1987's Going Bananas. We'll see where this ranks against these other films. 1988's Mac and Me, and 2003's Tiptoes. If you thought that Paul's last joke was a little offensive, wait till you watch Tiptoes. we just put you through a living hell. The least I could do is give you a plug. Where the hell can these fine binge lords, remember, gender neutral, just like Bonzo.
I've learned that today.
Just like Bonzo. Where can our binge lords find you on socials, and where can they listen to on your podcast?
Well, first of all, let me say, it's despite the subject matter, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Jason, for having me back. I have a great time whenever we get on the mic together, and today has been no exception. Your critique of films is second to none, and yeah, even deep diving here, you've probably made me appreciate it more. My score may have actually elevated from 0.5. It might have been more like 0.3 before I heard you talk about it and pull it apart in more sophisticated fashion than I had. But the Binge Lords can find myself and Wayne doing a countdown every week at The Countdown PC on Twitter. Just search or Google The Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. We're pretty much everywhere you can find podcasts, except Google Play, because Google Play won't host shows from outside of America. So yeah, thanks Google Play.
All right, well, I highly recommend anybody, if you enjoy this show, you will probably definitely enjoy the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. I'm a subscriber, you should be too. I don't listen to very many movie podcasts because I do one, and the last thing I want to do is hear more people talk about more movies, because I want to escape from the hell that is my life of watching movies like Going Bananas. But I do listen to you guys. You guys have, I think, some of the best chemistry of a duo out there in podcast land, and you've been doing it for over 5 years now. And I just want to say something.
That's correct.
If you are an independent podcaster and you're producing over 5 years of weekly uninterrupted material plus bonus material via Patreon, you are in rare air, my friend. And the consistency of delivering your content and the quality of that content and the humor between you two, and you are you praise me for elevating the great works of Menachem Golem and Going Bananas, but I've heard you pick apart a movie a time or two as well. And if you enjoyed Paul on this show, he's guested on our Carpenter episode for where we did Escape from New York. And then we also, back in the day, we talked about One Missed Call, one of the greatest movies ever made. That was his original debut. So Paul's been with us since the beginning. We look forward to having you back. And
look forward to getting you on the show. We're going to get our timelines right, and you're going to be on. This is a pledge.
One of these days, I will appear on your show, maybe, if I can remember what day it is.
Absolutely. We'll get it right.
All right, Paul. We enjoy having you, and we will enjoy having you one more time. Your mission is not yet complete. You've binged five of the worst what the fuck movies of all time. Let's see where they rank in our very next episode. Till next time, binge on.
There ain't no good. There ain't no bad. There ain't no happy.